This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, I'm Maxine Clark and you're listening to another edition of The Economist. The first article from this week's Economist is titled Corpulent Consultancies, the Business of Advice. Consulted. The corporate world's know-it-alls need some counsel of their own. Dear Chief Strategy Architect, as a corporate philosopher behind one of the world's most illustrious consultancies, you well know how tough business has been lately. Only 2 years ago, you were reaching for the stars. Clients jolted by the COVID-19 pandemic sought you out as a supply chain savant and doyen of digital businesses. The craze over environmental, social, and governance, ESG, considerations turbocharged your bottom line. Unfortunately, you went on a hiring binge. Now, the good times are over. Growth has slowed as clients have cut back on splashy projects. Workforce optimization has been widespread, though at least you gave something back by hiring extra security staff to see the ex-partners off the premises. This month, an anonymous memo, purportedly written by McKinsey ex-partners, scolded the firm's unchecked and unmanaged growth and lack of strategic focus. Those are harsh words for a business built on telling companies how to manage their affairs. You might go so far as to say the consultants need some wise counsel. That is where my firm, the premier consultant for the world's consultancies, comes in. I apprehend a 367-slide presentation that goes into the detail. But my diagnosis is simple. You are all too big. The combined revenue of the 8 leading firms in your industry is now double what it was a decade ago. Partly, that reflects growing demand, but it is also middle age spread. You are bloated, my friend. You used to be in the advice business, but you have lost your focus and your strategic alignment is out of kilter. Bain, BCG and McKinsey, the best of breed strategy advisors, increasingly string out a contract for guidance into months or years of work, helping clients to implement their brainy ideas. An incentive to make their advice even harder to understand. The Big Four accounting giants, Deloitte, EY, KPMG and PwC, are taking this a step further by running activities from supply chain management to cybersecurity on clients' behalf. They call this managed services. To me, it seems like outsourcing on steroids, and about as good for you. By now, you'll be protesting that you had a sound business case. I know, I have read your pitches. Oceans of experience alongside massive economies of scale in areas like technology make you more productive than your clients at many things. Companies have been backing out of back-office ops like payroll management for decades. Yet, the blurring of responsibilities between client and consultant raises awkward questions. It was bad enough when a top-dollar executive team could not work out their own strategy. Now, they have delegated running the businesses, too. What is left to do? A fuzzier definition of consulting also carries two risks for you. The first is that clients begin to question the value of all those pimply 20-somethings you are billing them for Be assured, our team is staffed exclusively with jaded 50-somethings. The second is that, at a time of disruption, you take your eyes off your core business of providing advice. For now, artificial intelligence looks like a godsend as clients turn to you again for help. In time, it could upend your industry. That is why we have a new transformation program for firms like yours. You know how this works. I'm not going to tell you what it involves until you sign the contract. But if you commit to be with us for a few years, I am confident you can overcome these challenges. Yours, Bill Fold, Chief Growth Hacker, PDQ Consult. And the next article is titled Accounting, Numbers, Guys and Gals. A profession tries a makeover to attract newcomers. In TikTok parlance, accountant is code for a sex worker. Now, proper bean counters want to reclaim the title and make it appealing to prospective recruits on the popular short video app and elsewhere. The American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, AICPA, the profession's main trade group in America, has a TikTok feed laden with career tips and young accountants, the real sort, living their best professional lives. It has 27,000 followers and its work cut out. America had 1.6 million accountants and auditors last year, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That is down from nearly 2 million in 2019. Many veterans are retiring. 5 years ago, 3 in 4 certified accountants were at or near retirement age, according to AICPA. Too few youngsters are interested in taking their place. Only 65,000 students completed an accounting degree in 2022. Down from around 80,000 a year between 2012 and 2018. This is having a material impact on American business. Advance Auto Parts, a car parts supplier, explicitly mentioned the loss of certain accounting personnel and turnover of accounting positions as a reason for delaying its quarterly regulatory filings last year. It was not alone. In 2023, more than 700 companies blamed a lack of personnel, typically in accounting, for potential errors in their financial statements. According to Bloomberg, nearly a third more made similar excuses in 2019. Unless more people are attracted to the profession, such problems will proliferate. The rub is that making accounting appealing as a career is hard, says Ashley Austin, who teaches it to undergraduates at the University of Richmond. Other finance jobs, such as investment advisor or trader, require less time in college and pay more on graduation, she admits. Ms. Austin tries to promote the profession by describing practitioners as interpreters of data rather than counters of beans. PwC, one of the Big Four professional services firms with a giant accounting practice, is collaborating with accounting professors to make entry-level courses less tedious, says Rod Adams, PwC's chief recruiter in America. It helps that a lot of the grunt work typically taught in first-year classes is now done by computers, leaving the fun, creative stuff to humans. AICPA, too, wants to jazz up the job by branding the accountant as a strategic contributor, or, in the words of Tom Hood of AICPA, from a CFNO, the chief financial officer who vetoes projects, to a CFKNOW. One campaign led by AICPA touts virtues such as autonomy, remote work, travel, the ability to live anywhere. Just the sort of thing that many youngsters say they relish. Accounting Plus, as the initiative is called, has enlisted the general manager of the Pittsburgh Steelers, an American football team, to endorse accounting courses. It has also sponsored TikTok influencers to make the career sexy. Not too sexy, though. At least, one of the TikTokers had to clarify that she was endorsing actual accounting, not the sex trade. The next article is titled The Lost Art of Self-Management. The golden age for CEO whisperers may be coming to an end. An anonymous memo briefly circled the web in March. The authors, who claim to be former partners at McKinsey, rebuked the illustrious strategy consultancy for its pursuit in recent years of unchecked and unmanaged growth, and chastised its leadership for, of all things, a lack of strategic focus. With humility typical of McKinseyites, they warned that an organization of genuine greatness was at risk of being lost. The memo, which was swiftly taken down, is but the latest murmur of discontent at McKinsey. In January, Bob Sternfels, its managing partner, was forced into an internal contest for the top job after he failed to clinch support for re-election from a majority of senior partners in an initial round of voting. Although he ultimately prevailed, the saga hinted at the trouble brewing within the firm. Not long ago, the consulting industry looked indestructible. Fees rocketed during the COVID-19 pandemic as clients sped up efforts to digitize their businesses, diversify their supply chains, and respond to growing calls to bolster their environmental, social, and governance (ESG) credentials. The consulting revenues of the industry's most important firms, including the triumvirate of strategy advisors, Bain, BCG and McKinsey, the big four accounting giants, Deloitte, EY, KPMG and PwC, and Accenture, also the world's largest outsourcer, grew by 20% in 2021 and then 13% in 2022. Since then, however, growth has been soggy for the industry's Great Eight, slowing to around 5% in 2023, according to estimates by Kennedy Research Reports, an industry watcher, and calculations by The Economist, based on company filings. Clients grappling with inflation and economic uncertainty have cut back on splashy consulting projects. A dearth of mergers and acquisitions has led to a slump in demand for support with due diligence and company integrations. That has caused a headache for the consultancies. When demand for clients looked limitless, they recruited staff as if there were no tomorrow. Revenues at McKinsey are up by a third since 2019, but headcount is up by half, to 45,000. As job opportunities at startups and private equity firms have withered, few consultants have left the firms of their own accord, reversing the spike in attrition rates during the pandemic. Now, tomorrow is here with a vengeance. Bain and Deloitte have paid some graduates to delay their start dates. Newbie consultants at a number of firms complain that there is too little work to go around, stunting their career prospects. Layoffs, typically rare in consulting, have become widespread. All of the Big Four have made cuts to their advisory teams. Last year, Accenture, the only one of the eight that is publicly listed, said it would fire 19,000 staff. On March 21st, the company reported that its consulting revenues for the quarter to February shrank by 3% year-on-year, after flattening in the previous quarter. It also lowered its growth forecast for the year ahead, sending its share price down by 9%. The consulting industry has made it through choppy waters before, including the dot-com crash and the global financial crisis. Yet, its recovery this time will be complicated by three things. The first is geopolitics. The consulting giants, all of which are based in America or Europe, have benefited from decades of globalization during which they spread their tendrils into every part of the globe. Deloitte, the biggest of the bunch by consulting revenues, has offices in more than 150 countries and territories. That is now placing the firms in awkward spots. Last month, it emerged that the Urban China Initiative, a think tank co-founded by McKinsey, provided advice to the Chinese government in 2015 that helped shape its Made in China 2025 plan, which has sought to reduce the economy's reliance on foreign know-how and place China at the forefront of sectors from electric vehicles to artificial intelligence, AI. Although McKinsey denied that it wrote the report, some American lawmakers have called for the firm to be barred from American government contracts. In the 12 months to September 2023, the federal government paid McKinsey more than $100 million in fees. Now, China is also starting to squeeze foreign advisors of various stripes out of its market. Last year, Dentons, a global law firm, unwound its tie-up with Dacheng, a Chinese one, in response to new cybersecurity and data protection rules that made the combination unworkable. Although China is yet to produce a homegrown consulting powerhouse, it has already begun to make life difficult for foreign ones. Staff in Bain's Shanghai office were questioned by Chinese authorities last year for reasons unknown. On March 22nd, it was reported that the Chinese government was scrutinizing PwC's auditing work at Evergrande, a bankrupt Chinese property developer that has been accused by China's government of fraudulently inflating its revenues. That could weigh on PwC's consulting business in the country. It is not only the West's relationship with China that is causing problems. In February, the bosses of BCG, McKinsey and Tenio, a smaller consultancy, along with Michael Klein, a dealmaker, were hauled before a congressional committee in Washington after failing to hand over details of their work for Saudi Arabia's public investment fund. The committee is investigating Saudi Arabia's efforts to build soft power in America through, for example, its investments in sports such as golf. McKinsey and BCG said that their staff in Saudi Arabia could be imprisoned if the firms divulged what they had done for their client. The Gulf has been a rare bright spot for the consultants of late, with the oil-rich states splashing out on advice as they seek to diversify their economies. Waning enthusiasm for ESG, denounced by critics as woke capitalism, presents a second threat to the industry's recovery. In recent years, the consulting giants have spent big on building out their ESG offerings, especially around decarbonization. In 2021, McKinsey acquired three sustainability consultancies. In 2022, Accenture gobbled up five. So far, these investments seem to be paying off. Christoph Schweitzer, the boss of BCG, which acquired Qantas, an environmental consultancy, in 2022, says that sustainability was one of his firm's fastest-growing areas of work last year. Whether that growth will continue at the same pace is less clear. In America, Republican-run states, including Florida, Missouri, and Texas, have withdrawn funds parked with BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, in protest over its use of ESG considerations when making investments. Consulting clients surveyed in January by Source Global Research, another industry analyst, ranked sustainability projects 10th in their list of priorities for the year, down from 4th in 2023. Some consulting grandees admit that certain clients are reining in their climate ambitions. Stretched consumers are now less able to pay a green premium, suggests one big. The third and thorniest challenge for the Great Eight is technological change. For many years, clients sought their help to modernize creaky old systems. Increasingly, the consultants themselves are grappling with digital disruption. The boss of a big buyout firm says that his dealmakers are turning to software tools and data providers rather than pricey consultants for some of the analysis needed to evaluate a target company. Other tasks that legions of consultants once spent hours on, such as compiling and categorizing data on a company's spending habits, can now be done at the push of a button. The consultants are not standing idle. Bain, for example, has redesigned the way it does due diligence on companies, incorporating nifty tools such as web scraping programs. The firms are also racing to stay one step ahead of AI. Last August, McKinsey launched Lily, a chat GPT-like bot trained on its corpus of frameworks and other intellectual property, which consultants can use to speed up their work. Others have followed suit. Manny Maceda, the managing partner of Bain, reckons these bots will free up time for consultants to better understand the organizational realities of their clients. Excitement among clients over this type of generative AI is also creating opportunities for new work. Mr. Schweitzer says that BCG has already completed hundreds of projects with clients around the technology. Accenture has booked $1.1 billion worth of generative AI work in the past 6 months. Much of this is happening in collaboration with the tech companies developing the AIs. Accenture has been working with Microsoft. In March, the consulting firm also announced a partnership with Cohere, an AI model builder with which McKinsey has buddied up too. Bain has an alliance with OpenAI, the maker of ChatGPT. BCG is collaborating with Anthropic, one more AI firm. Such partnerships look like a welcome source of growth for the consultants. In time, though, they could become a drag, especially if they are successful. The quicker corporate clients become comfortable with chatbots, the faster they may simply go directly to their makers in Silicon Valley. If that happens, the Great Eight's short-term gains from AI could lead them towards irrelevance. That is something for all the strategy brains to stew on. And the final article from this week's Economist is titled World in a Dish, God of the Greek Kitchen, How Moussaka Made It into the Pantheon of Greek Gastronomy. In 1821, Greek revolutionaries rose up against the Ottomans, setting off years of bloodshed that culminated in the creation of a free state in 1829. On March 25th each year, Greeks celebrate Independence Day with parades and abundant feasts of bakalliaros skodalia, delicately battered cod with garlic dip. And yet, it is moussaka, sloppy squares of richly flavored mince, potatoes, aubergines, and indulgent bechamel sauce that many consider Greece's national dish. Its entry into the pantheon of Greek gastronomy came about a century after Greek independence. The country's embrace of the dish is a lesson on how traditions are forged and how a nation's cuisine evolves. Nicholas Selamentes is considered the godfather of Greek moussaka. In the 1920s, he published the first complete Greek cookbook, Cooking Guide, which included 6 recipes for moussaka. His creations contained none of the pungent flavors hitherto used by Greek cooks, such as bay leaf and cinnamon. These are contamination from nearly 4 centuries of Ottoman rule, Selamentes wrote. He hated garlic and, unusually for a Greek, olive oil. The chefs of antiquity had not tossed cumin or other Eastern spices into their pots, he said. His efforts to bake politics into food were successful. The cookbook became a staple of wealthy urban kitchens and the word Selamentes synonymous with a recipe book for a while. By tapping into patriotism, Selamentes revolutionized Greek cuisine. Not all foreign influences were anathema. Like many culinary contemporaries, Selamentes was besotted with French gastronomy. This may have been what inspired him to coat his moussaka in velvety bechamel. His Gaelic-Greek creations also featured aubergines, as well as fried courgette and, in winter, artichoke. The French gratin, a vegetable casserole enveloped in white sauce and breadcrumbs, was a more likely source of inspiration than versions of moussakas cooked in the Middle East, says Alagia Cremesi, a food writer. Cultures have long borrowed from one another, and gastronomy is all the richer for it. A dish ripe for reinvention is also more likely to endure. Selamentes moussaka is still served in tavernas around the world. Nowadays, there is no single way to prepare it. A restaurant in eastern Corfu bakes crayfish between layers. In Britain, cooks might chuck in roast goose. Lo and behold, the goussaka. As for the bechamel, it is best kept light by whipping tangy yogurt with olive oil. If he knew, Selamentes would be whipped into a frenzy. And with that, we conclude this week's edition of The Economist. Until next time, I'm Maxine Clark, signing off. Goodbye.